My guest today is Aylin Cucci. She is Anishinaabeg from Nipissing First Nation in Northern Ontario, just north of Toronto, actually. She is a painter and a printmaker, but where she's truly comfortable is in sculpture. She's a one-time Grand Champion Butter Sculptor, in fact. it says here you taught Rick Mercer how to sculpt butter once.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, and she has a couple of large-scale public sculptural commissions that will roll out in the upcoming year, and we'll talk a bit about that. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so let's start out. Let's talk about, I gave you the introduction, but maybe in your own words, tell folks what it is that you do and what you enjoy doing most and some of the things you're working on these days.
Yeah, so right now I'm doing my Master's of Fine Arts at OCAD University here in Toronto, focusing on Indigenous monument, basically under the Truth and Reconciliation Commission's call to action to create monuments for residential schools. My own grandfather was a residential school survivor, so I started thinking a lot about what that monument should look like, could look like, from an Indigenous perspective. Instead of putting your typical colonial sort of bronze and stone monument, you know, could Indigenous monument be a gesture instead, or what sort of materials could it be made out of? So that's kind of what I've been working on for the last couple of years.
What are some of your thoughts about how you can reflect reconciliation? So you mentioned materials and the kind of materials. You know, it's funny because some great stuff out there. I've seen Christy Belcourt's stained glass window.
Yes.
We're going to talk a bit about Carrie Newman and his witness blanket.
Yes.
That's an amazing piece of work. Do those kind of reflect somehow some of your thinking, or do you take a different approach?
Yeah, for sure. Actually, Carrie's witness blanket is part of one of my case studies that I'm using for my thesis, because I think it's an interesting way to look at how the arts can play a part in reconciliation, but also what kind of projects can be done in terms of recognizing what happened and reflecting on the true history. So I'm sort of at this point now where I have all this research and now I've got to figure out what the heck it is that I'm going to do with it. So I'm still sort of working through what I'm thinking about. I know for sure there's been also a lot of monument interventions. So I've been looking at a lot of those, and I've been doing my own monument interventions.
What's a monument intervention?
So I'm just trying to think of who did it now. So Jeff Thomas, for one. He's done a lot of monument interventions with, in particular with the Samuel de Champlain monument in Ottawa, working with there's a long history behind the monument, but he's been working with sort of this blank slate that was left when they removed the Anishinaabe scout off of the bottom of the monument. I'm trying to think of where you can go to find out more information, because you really have to.
I know Jeff Thomas has a website.
It's all on there. That's right.
That's going back a few years.
It is going back a few years.
Yeah, but I remember reading about that.
Yeah, and he's been doing like a lot of photography work that sort of intervenes, placing, you know, for example, a for rent sign on this empty platform, just to have conversations around the monument and what it means to have this monument on Indigenous lands, especially in Ottawa.
Yeah, right? Well, I lived in Ottawa. Actually, I met Jeff Thomas about 15 years ago, because we were working on launching, with the Aboriginal Healing Foundation, we were launching the residential school exhibit. And he was the curator for that.
Okay, so
let's, you were telling me before we started recording that you have a public installation that's going up.
Yeah.
Talk about that.
Yeah, so I have an installation going up in Barrie, Ontario. It was done by Pratt Homes, and Pratt Homes basically about 3 or 4 years ago launched a call for a competition. And they brought in 4 artists, and I happened to be one. And they basically had the public vote on it. And the public voted for my sculpture, which was which is titled HIO Big Chiefs. It'll be seen, from the 400 as you're heading through the center of Barrie. It's going to be on top of a building, so it's a little complicated to sort of negotiate how to make a sculpture work on top of a building, because you don't have that sort of one-to-one way of looking at the sculpture. It's 70 feet off the ground in the air, so it's a little complex. But so
people will see it as they're driving by, and
I think it'll probably mostly be seen from the road.
Yeah,
as people are driving, and I don't actually even know about how that works in terms of people being able to see it. You know,
so that wasn't actually built into the concept then. Just that's happens to be where it's going to be installed, or
yeah,
because there are some works that are sort of meant to be seen in that way, I guess. And why Barrie?
Well, that's where the building was going in. Okay. So they wanted this for the top of the building. The building also is being built on an old portage route called 9 Miles Portage.
Yeah.
And so basically the sculpture sort of recognizes the people who had used that 9 Mile portage before settlers came. So the Wendat, the Anishinaabe, and to a certain extent, the Haudenosaunee. So so that's kind of what that sculpture is about in terms of context.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see how it goes. It fell in a little bit late in terms of getting finished, so it won't be put up until May now, but it just got finished, and it was really amazing to see my concept go from this drawing to this actual 18-foot-high sculpture.
When you mentioned the portage there, the Toronto Carrying Path is just a little bit west of where we're sitting right now, and of course, it's the exact same idea. And I've always thought, you know, there is some plaques and things and markers that are still marking out aspects of that path, but there's a lot of opportunities here in the city to do that same kind of thing. Are you thinking at some point doing things in the city here at all?
Well, I mean, once my schedule clears off a little bit, there'll be more chances to sort of look at. There are public commissions that come out and people send them to me all the time, and I just look and I can't even get into it because I'm just way too busy. But I think it would be nice at some point to do something like that. I know also originally what started me down the path for my thesis was that the chief of my community, Nipissing First Nation, had asked me about whether or not I was interested in creating a monument for residential school survivors from Nipissing. And that's sort of what was the catalyst for my thesis. But I've also been thinking about the idea of public art and monument as being land acknowledgements.
Mm-hmm.
And what can we learn from that? And how meaningful is it?
I think that's a big topic right now, just generally looking at it in the context of art or monuments is one aspect. But yeah, people are talking a lot about, well, is that sort of the end game of that's all there is? We're going to acknowledge the land, but so what?
Yeah. Well, and that's exactly it.
You think there's a role for it? I mean, you could look at it as we're reminding people, hey, you know, these are the original inhabitants of the land here before people came and settled. These are the people who were here. And that could be part of a longer reclamation or restitution or other forms of addressing that past.
Yeah, I've really struggled lately with the idea of, especially with all of the discourse this past summer surrounding the Confederate monuments that came down in Charlottesville and everything that came along with that. I also did my undergrad at NASCAD in Halifax.
Okay.
And at that time, the Cornwallis Monument has had a lot of conversations around that. And I struggle because sometimes I think that it's the engagement with these monuments that remind people about the true history. So sometimes I wonder what people actually get from monuments. Do they know the history of the monument when they walk past it every day? Do they know the history of that person? And then when you have Indigenous people who engage with the monument in terms of even throwing red paint on it or having a protest around it. That's the part of the education that is needed in Canada. So removing those monuments removes that action, but it also requires work on behalf of Indigenous people. So it's like, it's this really sort of catch 22.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I've sort of been thinking through in terms of, yeah, of monument and colonial monuments in particular.
Yeah. It's interesting because you've put two things next to one another, and one is, on the one hand, I mean, you're somebody who's actually creating public works, mm-hmm, of art, and you're doing that because they have a value to bring a certain history to life, which maybe people don't know about. And the whole argument of the people that I heard, you know, we have to get rid of these Confederate monuments. They said, and anyways, who learns history from that anyway? There's no loss there.
Yeah.
So you just kind of pointed out a weird, I guess it's got to be one or the other. Should we jump into some of the discussions you've been having lately? And mostly they've been online.
Yeah.
And there's a few of them, but would you say it's fair to say that cultural appropriation is the big one right now, or one of the big ones?
Yeah. Well, I think that there was a series of unfortunate events that happened starting last spring.
Mm-hmm.
We had the Amanda Peel controversy,
right,
that quickly sort of spun into the Cultural Appropriation Prize,
right,
which Alicia Elliott was involved in. The conversations were there beforehand. They've been there for years. People have been protesting Cleveland Indians or the Washington Redskins logos for years.
That sounds like a nice segue. Let's talk about Sue Coleman. I've got a clip, yes, here. It's about 2.5 minutes long. This is Carrie Newman, who folks will know as an artist from out west. And I know him principally from the Witness Blanket, which was, I think I mentioned a few minutes ago, which is a large piece that commemorates, or is that the right word?
It brought pieces from residential schools.
Exactly. It's actual physical artifacts. Mm-hmm. And it's very big. And this was an installation that I saw. It was at the TRC, the final, mm-hmm, Ottawa event, which was, wow, that's a few years ago now.
Yeah, it travels.
And it travels around.
Yeah, I'm not sure where it is right now, though.
Yeah, so I talked to Carrie earlier in the week, and I asked him to kind of introduce how this letter got started that, mm-hmm, he wrote about, says who she is and talks about her, but she, mm-hmm, she is an artist from out west who has made a career doing or producing what she describes as, I guess, Native art or Indigenous art.
Yes.
So here, Carrie will set this up and then we'll talk about it.
Angela Sterrett, who does a CBC show called Reconcile This out of Vancouver, did a piece about cultural appropriation. One of the aspects of it was questioning Sue Coleman's Indigenous roots. And she doesn't have any, and she doesn't claim any, but she's made a long career, a 30-year career, of putting landscape, wildlife paintings with First Nation Northwest Coast formline design in them. And she called herself an interpreter, a translator. And her work is very, it's everywhere out here. Anyways, I don't know how widespread it is in the rest of the country, but if you walk into a tour shop anywhere in British Columbia, you'll see note cards and calendars and things of her work. Angela sort of uncovered was that a lot of people didn't know that she wasn't Indigenous, and in her conversation with Sue brought up this artist who she had met 30 plus years ago at a craft show in Souk, who was an Indigenous carver, and she'd asked him to teach her Northwest Coast design. And he had said no. He told her that he didn't know what she was going to do with it, and he didn't think that he wanted to teach her. Well, that artist that she refers to is my father. So that was kind of my my impetus for responding, because in Sue's book, she talks about my dad like he has somehow endorsed her, and she thanks him for showing her the way. And And a lot of this stuff is untrue. My father has never endorsed her. He's always been frustrated by the fact that she's made a career out of this. I sort of put a call out on Facebook, actually, asking who would be interested in signing a letter like this. And then working together with a group of artists, mostly from out here, but a couple of other notable names like Aylin and Jesse Wente and some people from the rest of Canada, we put together a letter just asking her to be accountable, asking her not to displace Indigenous bodies by taking our work without any connection to our community, without any understanding of our culture, and sort of sent it out to media agencies and to Sue herself. And I think that the primary goal wasn't necessarily to convince Sue Coleman to change her ways, because that's been that hasn't worked out so far. But it was more about raising awareness and educating consumers and educating the other galleries and the shops that carry her work, and letting them know that when she says, "I've never heard from the Indigenous community that this isn't okay," if we make the story big enough, then she can't say that anymore, at least.
So, a lot there. That's mm-hmm. a pretty good introduction, summary.
Absolutely.
You brought this up when you were hosting Indigenous XCA in December.
Yeah.
And you posted that letter, actually, the Sue Coleman letter.
Yes, I did. And also, Debbie Reese uncovered some other issues with Sue Coleman over the Christmas holidays, wherein she also is making a lot of money off of books that show this art, and also some of the writing that she's done in the books about Indigenous people and about how we live today is questionable, and quite frankly, it's insulting. So yes, Sue Coleman is another, you know, Sue Coleman, Amanda Piel, all of these people. I agree with what Carrie said in terms of educating people in terms of thinking through, you know, what am I buying? What is this artwork? Who made it? How, I hate using the word authentic when it comes to
Indigenous
artwork.
That's just what I was going to say. How authentic? Yeah. But, why do you hate the word authentic?
Because I think that there's a long history of authenticating Indigenous people. Mm-hmm. Status, non-status. So that word, I try not to use it.
Right.
Sometimes you have to. but you know, this comes back to work again. This comes back to Indigenous people having to constantly do the work to educate Canadians, whether it be educating about a monument and the true history behind the person behind in the monument, or educating in terms of what Carrie said, what is the gallery buying? What is the history behind that person?
The person who goes into a shop and thinks they're buying a piece of, you know, particular nation it is, or and thinks they're getting to use the word an authentic piece of work, or they're getting something done by an Indigenous artist, and they're not. I mean, that's a pretty clear cut problem, mm-hmm. right? You should be getting what you think you're buying, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of other things too. I mean, I'm going to be talking to some people about books, mm-hmm. and you know, you've got people like Joseph Boyden, for instance, you could talk about. So I just theoretically, I ask people, just because I'm interested in all this, I says, well, what if somebody really gets it right? What if somebody writes a book and all the details are there? They did all their homework. They went and they talked to the community and they got to know people. Mm-hmm. And so they create something which is representational and it's authentic in at least that sense. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. Is that appropriation?
I would say yes.
Yeah.
I would still say yes. Well, it's still appropriating. It's right. Still appropriating another culture. It's still appropriating another people. I think that there are also, and I'm really, really, really going to be hesitant when I say this because Carrie said it and he regretted it, but I think that there can be collaborations between Indigenous and non-Indigenous people that can come out with some really beautiful things. Collaboration does not mean, oh, I went to Joe Smith and he's Native and he said that it was okay that I do this. You know, collaboration is meaningful. It's really at the heart of reconciliation in the arts to me. Working together to have these meaningful conversations. I've seen a lot of reconciliation projects sort of go bad. So it's, that's why I'm hesitant in terms of saying this. But yeah.
So you would say if you're not an Indigenous person, just don't go there. Don't try to pull that stuff off. Don't.
Well, I kind of question why you would.
That's my first question. Why do you want to do this?
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of,
tell me what you're up to.
Yeah. Because
there's a whole history. We know why people have done it.
Yeah.
And it's usually not, when you really look at it, it's not particularly honorable.
Yeah.
Reasons.
Well, and I also think that within the arts community, within the arts world, First Nations, Native American, Indigenous, Inuit art has been pushed out and placed into this category of sort of this primitive artworks. We have an amazing group of Indigenous artists that are doing really leading edge, beautiful contemporary work that doesn't involve, creating like traditional artworks. Mm-hmm. It's a new way of creating art. I think that
throw names out there anytime you want. Give shout outs.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Dwayne Linklater, Tanya Linklater are super faves for me.
Yeah.
There's so many.
Well, it's good. It's good to promote people, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Rebecca Belmore is just absolutely phenomenal with her performance work. I actually get to sort of meet with some of these great artists every once in a while at OCAD because I have a really great primary advisor who sets me up with meetings. So it's been nice. Luke Parnell is now an associate or an assistant professor at OCAD, and he has some work in the National Gallery, in the new section of the National Gallery that's just beautiful. So, yeah. So in getting back to the idea of how we've been pushed out of the arts for so long, I think the frustrating part in terms of people like Sue Coleman or like Amanda Piel is that they take up space where Indigenous artists should be.
Yeah, I think Carrie used the phrase displacing Aboriginal bodies, which is a very physical.
It is.
It's like elbows and.
Well, it is if you think about it. I mean, she's not creating work that sort of exists in a bubble. It's physical pieces of work that people are picking up and buying and bringing home and putting on their walls.
Is there any sense of how many Susan Colemans are out there and what's the economic cost to Indigenous artists who are maybe getting pushed out of out so she can take up that space?
It'd
be interesting to know. How big a problem is this?
I might have to fact check it, but I think
that should be a project for someone.
There you go. I think that Angela Sterrett at one point said that one of Sue's works was selling for up to $30,000. That's a lot of dinero for an artist. Sometimes that's...
Is that the currency out west now, dineros?
Yeah. that's a lot of money. And for an artist, that's maybe half a year's salary, right?
Yeah.
If you're doing well.
So cultural appropriation, it means a lot of things, but I think at the heart of it, it's always been this idea of representation and who's going to speak. Are you going to be spoken for? Is somebody going to control your representation and your voice and that idea? But there's also just the very restrictive definition, which is like plagiarism, right? Do you think that's kind of also a big part of it? Is just like, I'm going to pretend these are my ideas, or that these forms are something I thought of, or that I have some kind of creative ownership of them.
Yeah.
And I guess where I'm going with this is, and I'm not just thinking of Sue Coleman, obviously, mm-hmm. but there's a uniqueness about doing Indigenous art. Mm-hmm. Like if I went to Belgium and I just set myself up somewhere and started doing Belgian art, it wouldn't be the same thing,
no.
right?
No.
Talk a bit about why it's
different.
Different.
Well, I think you can't have a conversation about cultural appropriation of Indigenous art without including the history of this country and how First Nations people have been displaced. And the economic sort of separation that's happened within the structures that Canada has been built on. So I think that, you know, if you're going to go to Belgium, well,
I'm not really going to do that. Don't worry.
Thank goodness. But if you're going to go to Belgium,
they'll be relieved to know.
Yeah. There's a big difference. I'm trying to think of at one point, I think I wrote about the fact that, you know, it's this constant taking, take from Indigenous people and claiming it as their own. I mean, even if you look at, you know, maple syrup in Canada, this is a Canadian thing, right? This is a Canadiana mm-hmm. thing, with roots in Indigenous culture, you know, that's sort of been co-opted and turned into this idea of lumberjack sort of Canadian. So, and then if everybody's doing Indigenous art, is it Indigenous? You know what I mean? Like there's like so many, I think I often say that cultural appropriation, the conversations about cultural appropriation are so large. They are large and they're nuanced in so many different ways. And you really have to take it almost on a case by case basis and really sort of reflect on it and take it apart and consider who is involved in it, and who it affects. So, you know, I'm hoping that the people who have been doing culturally appropriative work are reconsidering. And I think that Sue Coleman actually at one point said that she's thinking about moving down a different avenue
right
now after however many decades. But you know,
she's going to do Japanese art.
Yeah. it would be really nice if people just said, this looks like Indigenous art, but this person is not Indigenous, so I'm not going to buy it.
Yeah.
You know, or I'm going to search out an Indigenous artist who deserves my money. When you were talking about plagiarism, I was reminded about the Amanda Piel thing. Mm-hmm. And at one point during the conversations when the media was interviewing me, I changed the conversation around Amanda Piel because what she was doing was plagiarism. Mm-hmm. If you took side by side comparisons between her work and Orville Morisseau's work, all she did was flip the figure and do a really shoddy job.
It really did look like that's Orville Morisseau. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, and that's exactly what I'm talking about when I say, you know, we have to take this on a case by case basis,
right,
and figure out what the artist's intent is and what they're actually doing with the work.
Yeah.
So, but I know that Nancy King, Chief Lady Bird, has been sort of following Amanda Piel to sort of, and we've actually had a couple other galleries shut down her shows since then too. So I don't know. It's a lot of work again, you know, I'm trying to write my thesis and, you know, I'm looking and being asked to respond to a lot of this. And a lot of times lately I've just sort of decided to not have, I've turned down a lot of asks lately just because I'm pretty burned out.
Yeah. Where are you in your thesis?
Well, I'm supposed to have it written by
5 o'clock.
That would actually be exactly how I work.
Yeah.
But no, I'm supposed
to. Oh, it's three. I got to get started on my thesis.
I'm supposed to have it written in about 6 weeks or so. So yeah, that's pretty. And then.
And what is the topic? Do you have a title? A snappy.
I did. Yeah, it's. Decolonizing reconciliation through monument and public art.
Okay.
So I, the title's longer than that, and for some reason I'm just not even thinking about what it is right now. It won't come to my mind, but...
So you have a thesis, and by which I mean you're kind of a sort of view of what that looks like. Well, I guess you'd have to read the thesis, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I'll have to write it first.
Can you summarize it in 10 words?
I wish I could. I can't even summarize the beginning of it in 10 words.
Yeah.
But yeah, I also have to create work that reflects the thesis. So that exhibition is going to be coming up in April, right downtown. But
do you have a website where people? Yeah, I've seen pictures of your work.
Yeah, it's just my name, alan.ca.
Yeah.
So it's I mean, I try and keep that up too. It's hard being an artist and trying to keep up with all of these issues and doing your thesis work. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah.
The Roundtable, waynecasebeer.com.
So reconciliation, the R word.
Mm-hmm. Here we go.
Yeah, I know. Another small topic. How are you feeling about that? I mean, I've been getting kind of sour on a lot of the stuff that's going on. So I kind of feel for people who, you probably launched this years ago, right?
And yeah.
There was a lot more optimism.
Yes.
And so now you're stuck writing about reconciliation.
Thank you for understanding that. Yes. I also have been a little bit frustrated because, yes, 2 years ago when I submitted my proposal, there was a lot more, like you said, optimism. Since then, I've worked with some projects that I've realized should not have been done.
Yeah. Do you want to get into more detail, or what kind of projects?
Well, I mean, and I
sculpture of Justin Trudeau.
I shouldn't say it should not have been done. We're gonna have these bumps along the way.
Think so.
We're gonna have these conversations. The Mush Hole project happened last year in last September in Brantford at the original Mohawk
Institute.
Institute. So what they did there was they had Indigenous and non-Indigenous people artists come in and do performances. And installations, and I actually put one of my installations into the Mush Hole project, where I think there was some really concerns around it, is that even though there was Indigenous input into this project, which was led by the University of Waterloo, I think it was Waterloo, or Laurier. Oh, I hate those ones. They're all
one
over there.
One of those.
Anyways, I apologize for this. But basically, there was concerns about the fact that Indigenous First Nations artists were going to be going into this residential school, and I know for myself, after hearing all of the stories from my own grandfather, walking into that place was a lot heavier than what I thought it was going to be.
Right.
I hadn't considered that part of the project. I had to leave several times, actually, on the first day installing, because when you're in that space and you're thinking about children living in that space away from their families for so long, it's absolutely emotionally overwhelming. So there were several times where I had to leave, and there really wasn't any sort of help put on site for the artists who had to go through this. Monique Mojica actually wound up calling in elders on her own for support. The opening reception wound up bringing in the men's choir, the police men's choir, from the area, and they sang this very long 3 or 4 songs, and they ended their song set with "Like a Bridge Over Troubled Water," and the exhausted sighs from the audience, from the Indigenous portion of the audience, was just so audible. It just felt so trite. the opening reception sort of turned into this whole patting each other on the back, bringing in local MPs who patted, you know, these, it was centered not on Indigenous people. It was centered on sort of settlers who did this work. So anyway, it was just, the whole weekend was really exhausting. And I think there was a good portion of us, and I think I can speak for Monique, and Article 11, Tara Began and Andy Morrow. We just, by the end of the weekend, we were just, we left exhausted because of what, of how it rolled out. So these are conversations, you know, that settlers who want to be doing these reconciliation projects need to really consider they need to consider the Indigenous people who they're bringing in and what their history is. And that, I think, is sort of been my take home in terms of thinking through decolonizing reconciliation. I hate the word decolonizing too, by the way. I'm probably going to change that before the end.
Oh dear.
There's just so many, there's so many conversations just being thrown around right now, and it's hard for me to keep up. I don't know how anybody else is doing it.
Yeah.
You know, because there's so many perspectives on it, and some of them are really good and some of them are really bad, you know?
Sure.
So
I just thought of the, you know, steak restaurant thing. Mm-hmm. The AFN.
Oh, is, no.
That, who was that? One That's of the AFN regional chiefs.
Gord Downie thing.
Yeah.
Right?
The Johnny Wenjack Fund.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, you just like going to that steak restaurant. That's what that's about.
I just could not. That blew my mind. And yeah. I think I often do this thing where I put reconciliation and then put the little TM
right.
next to it because I feel like there's just some projects that, yeah. that
I should probably
been
explain
well
that
thought through
in case people don't know. So yeah. I think one of the regional chiefs for the Assembly of First Nations came up with this idea of reconciliation rooms, and specifically they did this in, and I mean, everybody who's ever been to Halifax knows that it's like a
steakhouse.
It's like a really posh, mm-hmm. yeah, high-end steakhouse that people always go to. I'm sure all the AFN folk, big chiefs go to the steakhouse. I can't think of the name of it, but I know it well, or I know of it. And so the idea is, I guess, you get together with some, you know, non-Indigenous people and you have steak.
And you
reconcile.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
And that was like their first thing out of the gate, I think, that the idea they came up with.
Yeah, and there you go. There you have it. You know, like just these ideas that I mean, if you look at that there's a Teach Like Gord hashtag.
That's yeah, that's another Twitter thing that was going around Twitter.
And that's, you know,
Twitter's funny because if you ever like, it's all people talk about something, and then you run into somebody who's not on Twitter and you mention this stuff and they look at you, yeah. like, what are you talking about?
I know, unless the media's covered it heavily, they're completely lost.
It's its own little world, but yeah, the Teach Like Gord thing, I saw that.
Yeah,
sure.
The Teach Like Gord hashtag was really amazing because you saw all these people posting photos of their kids dressed like Gord Downie.
Yeah.
So basically this recentered reconciliation on idolizing Gord Downie.
That's basically it. Yeah.
Which is wild, which yeah. is absolutely wild to me. And really heartbreaking.
Yeah.
You know, considering, you know, my grandfather, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission happened a few years after my grandfather passed away. So he never got to do any testimony. I don't know if he would have, but you know, but I do think about all of the people who did, you know, who spent their time testifying and speaking their truths. And it's very frustrating when I see projects deliberately moving forward in spite of the fact that Indigenous people are questioning its validity.
I don't really care about reconciling with the prime minister or mm-hmm. with, you know, the government. Actually, actually think it's good if we have kind of an oppositional relationship. That's probably not, you don't want it to be, you know, like it was or oppressive or anything, mm-hmm. but I don't think we're ever going to be buddies. Mm-hmm. the Mohawks are never going to be buddies with the government. That's what I'm saying. But I mean, I think there is still a lot going on that you don't see in the papers because it's small mm-hmm. and it's communities and it's sort of, you know, amongst ourselves kind of idea.
Yes, very much so. And I think that's the real work within reconciliation, I think, is happening within our own communities and the funding, finding the funding, having the funding to get together to have these conversations, to heal each other is really what reconciliation to me is about. So when I get frustrated with the other sort of ideas, those are the ones that are sort of the shallow that I guess my concern is that there's the idea that we're reconciling. And yes, there is really good work being done, but there's also work that really has nothing to do with Indigenous people in terms of healing our own communities. So, yeah.
Have you thought much about that, about your work as an artist and the work that you do and how maybe that could just be part of healing and, you know, your own community?
All the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the time.
Because I think all of us, you know, whether you're a writer or an artist, we tend to get pulled into this, oh, well, I have to go out and I have to explain things, first of all, and mm-hmm. educate people.
Yeah.
When I think maybe Canadians should be educating themselves.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And a lot of your effort, you know, you can get drained pretty quickly when your effort is going into trying to do this sort of conventional reconciliation stuff.
I'm gonna
reach the masses and
yeah. Well, and that's sort of when I say I've turned down a lot of projects, a lot of the projects that I have turned down have just been, you know, people asking me to take part in this, and I look at the whole project scope and I reply back, no, I can't take part in this, and here's why. And sometimes there's a little bit of change that happens, but I just turned down one a couple of weeks ago, and they're just going to go forward with it anyways, in spite of the fact that I had these concerns. It can be draining. But, you know, at the same time, what I really love about social media, about Twitter, is that there's these great conversations that are happening regularly.
Yeah.
And it's almost a very supportive community in terms of, you know, having Chelsea Vowell, Robert Yego, Jesse Wente. Like, there's such good supportive conversations going on within that helps with the burnout.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it helps with not having to feel burnt out, because sometimes I'll be looking and I'm like, and I'll see something and I'll be like, oh no, what's going on over here? And then I see these fantastic responses come out of Jesse's Twitter, out of Robert's Twitter. And it's just, it's nice to just have that sort of other people doing the work too.
Yeah.
Well, and even if we think about like the seal controversy.
Oh, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah. Kokum's Kitchen and all that. I was in Davisville last night, and if I had more time, I was going to go there. Wanted to go there.
You have to book like 2 weeks out now.
Yeah, I can't just drop in.
No.
Darn.
No.
Okay.
I can. You can. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, you probably can.
Actually, I was told that.
Probably can. Yeah.
But no.
You and Ian. Ian Mosby.
Yes. Yeah. I love Ian.
Yeah. Shout out to Ian.
Yeah. Big shout out to Ian. But yeah, the interesting thing about that was that, you know, the petition I created was just sort of almost a half-assed joke at first, and then as soon as I saw people signing it, I went, oh no, I better make sure that this is like done right. So I added some more things to the information section, and that was like within 5 or 10 minutes, because I think within 5 or 10 minutes I already had like 50 or 60 signatures on it. So
I mean, that worked out pretty good.
It did work out really good. But then that's, again, like it's created a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also a lot of work, because, you know, it was happening over Thanksgiving weekend.
Yeah.
the Kokum Kitchen had basically not responded to anything, and I didn't want the only people that the media were talking to be Jennifer Matos, who was the one who created the original petition. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it wound up with me jumping out of Thanksgiving dinner to have a phone conversation with APTN, or, you know, so accidental work, right? I think we're all accidentally implicated in a lot of these controversies that happen just because of the ways that we respond to it.
Right.
So, and then that creates more work, which is just part of the way it goes.
Yep.
So...
I'm thinking one day we can do our thesis as a Twitter thread.
Maybe I should.
Already's on the work.
Maybe I should just start pulling together all of my, actually, yeah.
I can't not ask you about the Rick Mercer thing. I went out looking for that. So you did a butter sculpture with Rick Mercer. That's your, one of your claims to fame there.
It was for a bit.
Was that part of his show?
Well, what it was the Royal Winter Fair happens every fall, I believe. And they do a butter sculpting competition. And what happened was that I won the grand champion for one of my hairs that I, hair bunny that right. I sculpted. So they asked me to come back as the winner and sculpt another piece of butter. So basically you win, so come in and do more work.
Awesome.
But the payoff was that Rick Mercer was going to be there that day, and he was going to be coming in to sculpt butter with me. Huh. So he's kind of a wild character. He's high energy. And it was hard to keep up with, believe it or not. But it was a lot of fun. We sculpted a parliament building, which is really ironic now that I think about it.
Parliament building.
It wasn't even a good one. Like, butter sculptures sounds, take a lot of time, so.
Yeah, that sounds very involved. All that gothic.
He basically just used the wire cutter and just made blocks, building blocks, and then stuck a Canadian flag on top of it. Anyways, it was an interesting time. That was many years ago.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, I think it was 2012.
I thought you were going to say 20 years ago.
20 years. No, I'm not that old.
Gosh.
Though I feel like it.
If you got any other thoughts, I can put them in, that's for sure.
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
And what's this other thing I saw you mentioned you were hosting?
Oh, Call Response.
Call Response. What is that?
Yes. Oh my goodness, what is it? So Call Response is a project that... Tara Hoag is currently curating, and it's out at the U of T Mississauga Gallery. It's called the Blackwood Gallery. And basically the whole project is it's got a very long description. I don't know if I can even put it together, but it's, the idea is bringing together Indigenous women, mm-hmm. and one creates a piece of work, which is the call. And then another one creates a piece of work in response. So this past Wednesday, I was out there, and Ursula Johnson, Rosary Spence, and Cherish Violet Blood did this long, ongoing duration performance piece where they sang and drummed for, I think it was about 5 hours with a short break in between. So, and the idea with that was that they just sort of riff off each other. They hadn't really sang together before, although I think that Cherish and Rosary probably have in the past, but I don't know if Ursula has sung with them. So it was really interesting to watch them sort of work between vocals, between all three of them, and sort of laugh and enjoy the time spent with that. But the Call Response Project hired me on as the social media writer in residence for the whole month. So there's more events coming up. There's more talks. And I think there's another art event in 2 weeks with Lisa Myers and a few other Indigenous artists. So it's a whole project that's spanning until the end of January. The rest of the events are going to be held at U of T in right downtown. Ah. So I'm going to be heading to those. And basically my job is to be responding to what's going on. So, which I haven't done yet for this week, but I've got some ideas that I'm going to be going through and probably writing out over the weekend and posting. So, yeah.
So check out Aylin's website.
Yep.
It's your name.
Yep.
.ca.
Aylin.ca.
Follow her on Twitter. Distract her from her thesis.
Please help.
And we'll look. And if you're driving to Barrie,
It'll be May that it goes up. So
yeah,
you can critique my
critique my work
as you drive by. Hopefully, you're not too distracted.
Yeah.
It won't be distracting, but. Yeah.
Well, it was lovely to see you in person.
Yes.
To have you on the show, and I thank you for your time.
Well, thank you.
This was great.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. Thank you.